Welcome again, everybody, to another edition of the Horsing Around podcast here for the off season. I'm Andy Lindahl, your Broncos sideline reporter from KWA Radio. Again, our man, Andrew Mason, joining the show that I have here on Denver Sports 760 in town. You can catch it on the iHeartRadio app if you'd like. But we had a lot to talk about this week, especially when it came to potential draft picks for this team. Would it be a guy like a Ryan Ramczyk? Is it Cam Robinson? Is it a tight end? Is it someone else? We also got a little taste as to what Vance Joseph is thinking as he began the offseason phase two program by addressing the media, talking about adding juice to the offense. We weigh in on all those topics here on the Horsing Around podcast, so enjoy.
As we look at where the Broncos are going with this number 20 pick, possibly, Vance Joseph telling us we need juice in the offense. He wants to add to it. It was kind of funny because I'm not sure Vance and Demaryius have had the meeting yet where they get on the same page as far as the definition of juice, judging by some of the comments yesterday. Where do you think they could go? What are the options here? We talked about tight ends last week. Do you think just because he says, because sometimes what happens is he says they need juice in the offense, and I think we all just assume there it looked like there was a need anyway on the offensive side of the ball, some sort of first-round talent to come in there and help out. Then Vance Joseph makes his comments. We all assume it'll probably be an offensive player now, but you probably can't assume that.
You can't assume that because then in that same comment, Vance Joseph said, you know, there's, you know, guys on down to the fifth or sixth round. So I think they've got multiple possibilities in mind to create that juice, whether it's a tight end that you can move around. I mean, you could get like a Bucky Hodges out of Virginia Tech who can go inside and outside. You can get him potentially round three. Evan Engram out of Mississippi, round two. Same type of player who can kind of go outside. He's 234 pounds and he runs a 4.4 240. If you're talking about guys who can handle returns, you know, Curtis Samuel out of Ohio State he's kind of a Christian McCaffrey light. Ryan Switzer from North Carolina, explosive punt returner, who's a very good slot receiver. Isaiah McKenzie out of Georgia does a lot of the same things that Percy Harvin could do coming out. He's small, he's .173, but he can return, and you can use him on jet sweeps and fly sweeps, and you can use him occasionally as a receiving target on offense. I think there are a lot of guys that could provide that juice, and they're not necessarily first-round picks. They're second, third, on down through the middle rounds.
Do you think that this whatever is going on with the quarterbacks is going to drop another great player into the Broncos' lap and maybe they don't have to move from 20 after all?
Potentially. And the thing that a lot of mock drafts, at least done outside of Denver, the thing that a lot of those drafts don't understand is that in that first round, John Elway is not picking for biggest need. He's trying to get the best guy. You know, cornerback in 2014 wasn't the biggest need, but they picked Bradley Roby. Because he fell. 2015, their biggest need was an edge rusher. But Shane Ray falls after the marijuana incident the previous weekend. They pick him. Hard to argue with either of those picks. Those guys have played quite a bit and made some big, big plays for this team. So I think if you just sit there and you do a mock draft and you have an offensive tackle, I could see an offensive tackle if the Broncos have a high grade on a guy, but if you have three or four quarterbacks go off the board in the first 20, that's going to push some of these defensive players, and there's a lot of good defensive players in this draft, in this first round. Some of those guys are going to be down there at 20. And, I mean, an example I would give is Jabril Peppers. If the Broncos have a high grade on Jabril Peppers, okay, safety's not the biggest need, but he could step right in and kind of you can put him in the box on sub packages and then have TJ Ward go deep. And so basically he takes TJ's role next to Brandon Marshall, and then he's also your returner. So if you've got a high grade on Jabril Peppers, who's just, even though he's a tweener, he's just an outstanding football player who makes plays and has amazing instincts, and he's all over the place.
What about a linebacker?
So, yeah, Reuben Foster. What if Reuben Foster drops? And you know, you could tag team him with Brandon Marshall on the inside potentially, and you've got a lot of force there on the inside. I mean, there's some of those guys that you're talking about that are being talked about as top 20 defensive prospect or top 10, top 12 defensive prospects, I could see some of those guys dropping to 20 just because of the quality of player there. And then you have to really think long and hard about picking that type of player at number 20. Or a guy like Hassan Reddick out of Temple is another guy who's a converted defensive lineman whose athletic skills are off the charts. He has pass rush ability. He's being projected as a linebacker. He might be there at 20 as well.
What about Jake Butt? We're asked by Mike on the text line. What do you think of Jake Butt?
The thing with Jake Butt, I mean, it's not a question of whether he's good enough. Obviously, it's the ACL. Now, because of that, and he had the injury last December, in the end of the season, of course, in the Orange Bowl, you're looking at his rehab time, and off-season's wiped out. Training camp is probably wiped out, so you may not have him on the field even for practice until you're starting the regular season, so maybe he's opening the year on the physically unable to perform list. And then, because usually you're not back to where you once were for another year after you tore the ACL, then you're not going to really know what Jake Butt is until year two. So let's say you take him in the second round. He's got a 4-year contract because you only have the fifth year option only exists for first rounders. So basically, with Jake Butt, you're only getting him for potentially 3 years. Is that worth it? Especially when you're not 100% sure that he's going to be all the way back from the ACL. He should at some point, but your rookie season is kind of a wash. And if you're the Broncos, you're in win now mode. Maybe you need to if Jake Butt is there in the second round, you think about him, but you're also thinking about an Evan Engram or a Gerald Everett or Bucky Hodges, guys who are going to be ready out of the chute, whereas Jake Butt's going to lose the entire preseason. And look, I mean, we've seen how losing that first year can affect a guy going forward. Look at Jeff Heuermann. Now, he has injury later during rookie camp, but You have that ACL coming in, messes you up. Adam Gotsis last year wasn't really himself last year because he had the ACL, and he suffered his 2 months before Jake Butt did. So
the jersey sales for Jake Butt are going to be through the roof, let's be honest. So, I mean, let's be real. Well, you know they are.
Do you play, if he makes a big play, do you play Baby Got Back? The opening words?
Maybe you do, right?
If he pancakes somebody?
He should have been a baseball player. He could have had great
Jake Butt runs over somebody in the open field, and next thing you hear over the PA system is, I like big butts, and I cannot
lie. Totally.
Huh? Oh, yeah. You like, man, Andrew's already putting it together.
Well, it's like...
Has he reaccommodated somebody?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking from a financial business perspective here. That's a good investment. I'm telling you the jerseys are going to sell out.
Well, the thing... Sometimes my 4-year-old, when she gets out of the bathtub, she'll start saying, but. So if the Broncos draft Jake Butt, I think she's going to get a Jake Butt jersey.
Everybody wants one.
Hey, well, Kevin asked the question, if he were to pick up the ball and then fumble it, is it the new Butt fumble?
Oh, hey now. Oh,
Honestly, where do you think he goes? Is he he's a second or third round guy in your mind?
Yeah,
right?
day two. I mean, I had him sixth among my tight ends, but all of those top six are off the board. I think at the latest by the middle of round three. The thing that hurts Jake Butt is the fact that there are so many other quality tight ends in this year's draft that he could slide because teams they don't want to wait a year to find out to get the full potential of a player, and they're not sure if he's back 100%. And so with enough other players in that same range as Jake Butt, he'll fall more than I think he would other years that have fewer good tight end prospects.
How much more different is he than Jeff Heuermann in your mind?
Better pass catcher.
Okay.
The thing with Jeff Heuermann, I mean, you're counting on him to be the guy who can kind of be the all-around tight end who could block and make plays in the passing game as well, but it hasn't really happened. I mean, his biggest catches have come when he's wide open. He hasn't had to make the play in traffic. He did some good work as a blocker. Like there was one of Capri Bibbs's runs in Jacksonville that he set up with some nice work on the edge. But he missed his rookie season with the ACL. He had the hamstring problems his second year, so he missed a lot of practice time then. I'm not sure anyone has more on the line on the roster when you get to the practices and OTAs and training camps than Jeff Heuermann. He's really at the fork in the road point, and with a new coaching staff, new tight ends coach Jeep Christ, he's got to show it.
Well, and will they be looking for a different tight end, different type of tight end than they were with Gary Kubiak? Because let's remember, Mike McCoy had some help in creating Julius Thomas. Mm-hmm. Now, the record-setting year that got him the fat contract came under Adam Gase, but Mike McCoy was part of the staff that figured out, hey, we've got something here.
And if Julius Thomas doesn't have the high ankle sprain in week two of his rookie season, he breaks out much earlier than in reality. Julius Thomas may be breaking out at the end of his rookie season if he doesn't have the high ankle sprain.
Let's be honest about it. Julius Thomas, when we saw him in the early parts of that first training camp for him, looked like he was going to be hands down a go-to red zone weapon.
Oh my gosh, he was catching everything.
Guys could not cover him. So it would have been real interesting to see how things changed. Same with Jeff Heuermann, though, if we're going to be talking about ifs and buts and injuries that didn't happen.
Don't forget with Mike McCoy in San Diego last year, used a high pick on Hunter Henry out of Arkansas. And Henry basically kind of the heir apparent to Antonio Gates, but found ways to get both Gates and Henry onto the field at the same time. And go back to the week six game, Denver and San Diego on Thursday night, and Hunter Henry, especially early in the game, caused a lot of problems for the Broncos defense. Antonio Gates was causing some problems as well. So clearly Mike McCoy wants to involve the tight ends. You know, he loves those chess piece type weapons, those guys that you can move around that can be inside and outside. And there are so many of these guys in this year's draft that it just seems like a very natural fit for the Broncos to get one of them at some point this year.
Do you think the Broncos take more than one, or they'll take just one tight end?
It wouldn't surprise me if they took more than one, although if they took an extra one, you'd be probably talking about a seventh round. Like a seventh round flyer, like, oh, we had a round four grade on this guy, is available in round seven, let's take him. That's because when you get to the end of the draft, you're not thinking very much about filling certain specific positions. You're thinking about, oh, this guy, he's sitting here at the 240th pick, and we had a top 100, top 125 grade on him, let's pick him. And inevitably, some guy, you know, at some position, and it may be tight end, one of those guys will drop, and then you pick, and then you end up picking the guy just because you think he's very good value.
Do you think, will the draft board dictate a heavier offensive draft in your mind for Denver this year, or is it still wait and see?
I think it's wait and see. Now, I would be stunned if they don't come through the draft with at least one offensive lineman, and again, maybe more, but the scarcity of offensive linemen, especially tackles this year, makes me think that you may not see late round offensive linemen, because what will happen is with fewer tackles than in previous years, guys may go off the board at a higher slot than their skill would warrant. So that would have a domino effect going down the line.
Looking up, watching ESPN, seeing Mark Cuban pull Tony Romo back, as it looked like Rick Carlisle had some desire to try to put him into the game last night. Before we move on to some more Broncos talk, what did you think of all that? I'm just not a fan of a guy. I don't know why. Now, I will say this. He had the warm-ups on, and he never really – it didn't look to me like he ever actually donned his Mavericks uniform on the bench. But
do you think Peyton Manning would have done a stunt like that for the Nuggets?
No.
I don't think so. So it's just a farce.
Yeah, Jason Garrett in the house. You had the tight end in the house. I'm forgetting his name. How can I forget his name? Jason Witten. So a lot of Dallas royalty there, I guess. This clearly, don't you just kind of take it as a shot by Mark Cuban at Jerry Jones?
A little bit, yeah. There's there's always a healthy competition among the local teams in any market because they're obviously they're fighting for, you know, corporate dollars or sponsorship dollars, et cetera. But this felt kind of petty and forced and
a little too
farcical.
Much.
Yeah.
I will say too, I was waiting for, they were interviewing Mark Cuban and I was kind of waiting for him to say something, to say something, everything. No, nothing. You know, he said he called Jerry and Jerry was fine with it and blah, blah, blah. And then at one point, and he finally said, he's like, you know, Tony just didn't get to go out on the football field the way he wanted to. And that wasn't right. So we wanted to give him a chance to go out the right way. And I was like, oh, and there it is.
There's the shot.
Boom, boom. And he had this little Mark Cuban smirk on his face. And I was like, ooh, there it is.
Okay.
Right there.
So do you think he comes back? I don't think it's going to be here. I think Denver fans just can put that to bed, especially now that there would be no offseason involved. But do you think you see him on the football field again?
No.
Apparently that's still being debated.
No. And here's the reason. He's signing with CBS to be their number one color analyst. Okay.
You don't give that up.
Right. Well, not only that, CBS isn't bringing him aboard to walk out on them and go back to playing football. They're bringing him in and they're planning to invest in him and they're planning, you know, to make him a very prominent face of their network. Cause you know, the NFL football, it's, correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, if it's not their highest rated show, it's one of the top two or three. Jim Nance and Tony Romo are two primary faces of CBS. So that and CBS is not signing Tony Romo on without some relatively ironclad assurance that he's going to stay in the booth and do the job for which he's contracted. I think he's played his last game.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. But that doesn't mean they won't debate it.
Now too, they start to seem to kind of enjoy retirement more than maybe, you know, it used to seem like, oh, they missed it a lot, but now it seems like there's so many opportunities. Oh, and their body feels so good. And there's so many, you know, business opportunities, career opportunities afterwards. A lot of guys you see retire, they seem to really be enjoying. Obviously they'll always miss the game, but there's kind of this whole world out there and there's great. I think they're realizing more and more now because they're in the position they're in, they have so many post-career opportunities. Mm-hmm. It's not like they go through that phase of struggling to find a new job, to find a new path. I mean, it's waiting for them. So it's a nice transition.
The one thing guys say they miss is the camaraderie.
And see,
I remember hearing that from Peyton Manning
last year
when he retired about, you know, he talked about how he would miss like the flight home after a win and the good times and the fellowship on the plane and the bond among teammates and the bond in the locker room. I think guys miss that more than the actual playing.
And I'm blanking on his name. Jeff Campbell?
Yeah.
He said,
we
had him in here, and actually that was exactly what he said. We said, what's the one thing you miss? And he said, every day I miss the locker room. I'll always miss that. But, you know, the other stuff, you know, comes and goes. But that's exactly what
he said. But you know what? Here's something. I mean, guys, think about this. I don't think the locker room even – I think guys – look, I don't know. Maybe I'm completely wrong because Tony, to me, I will say, I don't think Tony appears ready to move on. I just think he knows this is – it's jump now or regret it later, right?
Because this is a –
this won't be open in 2 years.
It's a fantastic opportunity. And if he does well in it, he's going to far – he will far exceed anything he could have made coming back for a year.
I do think, though, that sometimes all locker rooms aren't equal. Though I think guys miss the locker room and miss some of that camaraderie, I think you also have to be in the right one. I think the Broncos
locker room.
Yeah. Some of these guys, because I think that's why, look, Calvin Johnson apparently isn't missing the locker room, right? He looked like he could still play. He didn't make any inkling that he wanted to return to Detroit. You know, I don't think he had a lot of fun there. I think certain locker rooms, certain environments, that's what's so special about Denver. They don't make you miss it too much. Not as much as you know, maybe a Green Bay, a Denver. Looks like Dallas has got a special thing going on, stuff like that. So it'll be interesting. I'm with the money these guys are making, I'm interested to see in the long term as we go along with the awareness of concussions and awareness of all the stuff that this sport does to you, how much I think we've already touched on it once, Andrew, where maybe a long career is 10 years and not something closer to 15 or 20 anymore.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You look back at Von Miller when he signed his contract last year. I think he said, was it Bronco for life? Well, if he plays out that contract, that takes him to 11 years, I believe. I think that I think that's one thing you'll see change is I think the outer limits of careers, unless you're a quarterback, but the outer limit because the quarterbacks you can because of you're taking you have less day-to-day contact, less day-to-day physicality, you can play for longer and kickers and punters as well. But I think for a lot of players who are engaged in in hand-to-hand physical combat, 60 plays a game, I think you'll see the career span become about 10 to 11 years on the high end.
All right, our insider Mike List just tweeted out Cam Robinson visiting today. I don't think that's a surprise. I think some people knew that was on the docket.
Yep.
What would be your assessment of him? What would be attractive about him at 20 if that's what it came down to?
Of the three tackles that you're talking about in the first round, Cam Robinson, Ryan Ramczyk out of Wisconsin, Garrett Bowles out of Utah, Cam Robinson's the most ready to step in and play right now. Now, there are some questions over whether, he's a pure left tackle, maybe you see him more as a right tackle, perhaps. But coming from out of that scheme at Alabama, the closest thing to a pro-style scheme that you're going to get in college football and playing in the SEC against a high caliber of competition, he should be ready to start in week one. Now, that said, I don't know that his ceiling is as high as the other guys. I think Cam Robinson, he's closer to what his maximum will be in the NFL right now than Ramczyk Bowles, or certainly some of the second and third round guys like Antonio Garcia out of Troy, Julian Davenport out of Bucknell.
What do you think ultimately happens as far where if you had a guess today, I feel like you think the offensive lineman probably will come second or third round, right? I don't feel like you think, unless maybe there's some trade involved, that you think the pick will be a first-round left tackle.
Not necessarily, no. And in fact, if the Broncos are zeroing in on tackles and they think the market is there, it wouldn't at all surprise me if all three of them are there at 20, and that may compel the Broncos to move down. Because you say, okay, there are three of them there, and let's say we like to, let's say you're sitting there and you say, okay, there's all three of those guys are there, and we like two of them. Then that's where you consider moving down 3 to 5 picks and saying, okay, we can still get one of these guys at 25 and then pick up a pick in round two or round three, where I think the real depth of this draft is on the second day.
It's going to be a fascinating chess game to watch in my mind, because this is where we have to start paying attention to this quarterback stuff. And I don't know whether to, again, I don't know whether to believe all this stuff or not, because I feel like in years past we've seen this where it wasn't just a couple of years ago where there was buzz about a bunch of quarterbacks and then they kind of cooled on all of them. Allegedly, this guy was moving up or that guy was moving up. And then as the round progressed, we didn't really get a lot of quarterbacks picked. It was it Geno Smith's draft year or that happened? Help me out. I'm trying to remember. It feels like it was in the last couple. It might be five because they all run together. But I remember there was one round in particular where only a couple of guys went and nobody really lost their mind about the quarterback. Is there any chance that happens this year with the NFL seemingly underwhelmed with this crop?
There's a chance, but...
Or do you think the steam's picking up where Trubisky and the big names we've heard are the guys that start going?
There's a chance because some of this stuff, I mean, you may see some smoke screens. It was 2013 that you're talking about with Geno Smith not going until round two. Now, can you name the only round one quarterback in that year's draft?
Geno Smith's year?
Yes. He was second quarterback off the board.
I can't.
EJ Manuel.
Really? Oh, yeah. And he was a shock.
Yes.
Really? Well, maybe not a shock. I remember Dave Logan saying he thought it would be the pick, and then that's what ended up happening. I had not heard anybody that thought the Bills were that interested in EJ Manuel going into the draft. But sure enough, he did end up going there.
The cliche about it only takes one team to fall in love with you is more true of quarterbacks than any other position. Because just look at Tim Tebow in 2010. Yeah. Broncos loved him, picked him. There were a lot of teams that didn't even have a top four round grade on Tim Tebow, and the Broncos picked him in the first round. So if a team loves that quarterback, they feel like they have to make sure they get that quarterback. That's why most years you see them fall off the board earlier than their talent would suggest. In an ideal world, the only quarterback that I would pick in the first round would be Deshaun Watson, but that's really not the case.
Okay, so who's the biggest wild card? Is it Trubisky? Trubisky doesn't seem to be a wild
card. Mahomes is a wild card.
Even over the Notre Dame kid, Kaiser?
Deshaun Kaiser, yeah. I'd say so. Kaiser, what's interesting with him, though, is, and this is going to reflect how the quarterbacks go off the board, Houston's sitting there at 25. And I think it's clear that Houston wanted Tony Romo.
Yep.
Now they've got Tom Savage. I mean, if you're the Texans, are you thinking about Jay Cutler? Or if not, are you thinking you need to get a quarterback now? Do you trade up in the first round? Do you sacrifice it? Do you feel strong enough about any of these quarterbacks to sacrifice a future first round pick to move up? Because that's probably what it would take for Houston, because they're sitting all the way down at 25, and those top three quarterbacks may well be off the board. And I'm actually saying Mahomes is probably a top three quarterback at this point.
Well, and I keep bringing up the quarterbacks because if they can sneak another quarterback even ahead of the Broncos, that mm-hmm. means that there's going to be another talented player that drops down to them that probably right. shouldn't have been there, which plays out to the Shane Ray, Bradley Roby, that sort of scenario like we've
and
talked
it
about.
Happens every year. There are surprises every year when the Broncos brass does its draft prep. They do some mock drafts, and they practice scenarios. And some of the scenarios involve players unexpectedly falling and seeing how things go. Are teams looking to make trades? Do the Broncos look to make trades? So you're preparing for a lot of those contingencies. It's the preparation for those contingencies, quite frankly, that made the Broncos prepared to go get Shane Ray a couple of years back.
So what makes guys the most nervous? Is it the agents or the GMs that get more nervous about these kids in this time period that we're entering? Because we've talked about Shane Ray a couple of times. And remember, it was a little pot incident. He owned up to it. The Broncos were pleased mm-hmm. with how he handled it. He's not been a problem since. But this is that little window now, right? Before we actually get to, where is it, Philadelphia this year? It used to be New York.
Yep.
Where the teams get, you know, maybe not the teams. Maybe it's more the agents. Who do you think is more worried? The teams about the player they like doing something, or the agent?
Oh, the agents, definitely. Because the team, okay, teams are sitting there, and they have multiple options. I mean, even teams that narrow their draft board considerably still will go in with 60 names that they'll consider drafting. So you've got a plethora of possibilities that you're looking at, and the team will just say, and then some teams will just say, well, this guy messed up. We'll just go get another guy and move on. It's the agents that are most nervous, because if something happens and that player drops, that's costing them money because the player is going to sign for a lesser contract. So easily the agents, no question. It's the GMs and the teams get nervous after the pick comes in,
before they get them into camp and get them figuring out how life's going to work.
Right.
See, it was. Do you think we'll have anything like last year? Who was it? Help me out with his last name. The lineman that ultimately went to the Dolphins. It was supposed to be
Laremy Tunsil.
Laremy Tunsil.
Oh,
that was unbelievable. I could not believe what we were watching as that thing unfolded last year.
Remember a long time ago, Warren Sapp.
Well, yeah, but that was where the pot rumors or whatever it was, mm-hmm. the pot thing that had popped a couple weeks before the draft. Yeah. I've never seen. On draft night,
yeah,
somebody basically troll you and bring some of your most embarrassing college pictures to light. That was incredible. That is the modern times that these kids live in. Is there any sort of quiet character concern about a headline name guy that's hanging out there now that you're aware of?
Well, Reuben Foster, remember he had the incident at the combine where he got sent home after he had a verbal altercation with a hospital worker. in Indianapolis. But the kerfuffle there seems to have died down a bit to where I think Foster's going to be solidly in the top 20.
He would
but,
be.
But then again, I mean, it's with Tunsil, there were a couple of things earlier that.
I was going to say, there was some concern there, right? You were worried that he wouldn't get it.
But like, but Shane Ray, when, you know, had the, with the, with the citation just before the draft, that was not, that was not something that you saw coming.
That was a surprise.
Yes.
That was a shocker to everybody.
In politics, you call it an October surprise.
So I'll ask both of you this. I find this interesting. I was on in San Diego with our buddy Judson Richards and Nick Hardwick, the former Charger lineman. And we were talking about various things. And they, of course, Nick had asked me, he said, is it just because we're in San Diego where we've lost our team? Or does there feel like there's a little less passion for the draft this year nationally, a little less interest than what there's been? And I'm not so sure he's wrong. You guys give me your impressions. I feel like because we don't have the Andrew Luck, we don't have, you know, the three quarterbacks that everybody was pining over as much last year, doesn't feel like there's as much desire for these guys as I felt like last year's class. Do you feel like the interest is maybe a little tepid?
I think the interest is strong here in this market because of Christian McCaffrey. Nationally, though, I think there's a little less buzz because none of the quarterbacks are a surefire. There's more questions about these quarterbacks than in some previous years, and this is a defensive back, defensive line, tight end draft. There are some good receivers and good players at other positions as well, but not necessarily the headliners. Even though I would argue that Myles Garrett should be a headliner. So I could see maybe a little less national buzz than usual, but I think it'll pick up when we get to draft week as well. I mean, don't forget also, just the last several weeks, you know, the draft buzz kind of hits a little bit of a lull because you have March Madness, because you have the Masters, because you have opening day. I think even with the NHL and NBA playoffs starting, it's going to pick back up and be pretty rampant as we hit the draft in 2 weeks.
I mean, Romy, do you feel like your people are buzzing about it, your friends, your social group, the way they have in the past?
I mean, I think it picks up as gets a little bit closer.
What about the offseason as a whole? How about I expand it just to the offseason? I just feel like nobody got their Tony Romo story like they wanted to. I don't know, you know, I mean, everything was done within 48 hours. I just feel like this has sort of been a ho-hum little offseason, wouldn't you say?
I wouldn't call it ho-hum. I would say that from the Broncos' perspective, it didn't have the thunderclap, positive or negative. That last year, when Brock Osweiler is signing with Houston, from the Denver perspective, that was a jolt. That was, you know, that was a thunderstorm coming across the plain. This year, you know, there was a pursuit of Calais Campbell. Didn't work out. He ended up going to Jacksonville. So, you know, maybe a little less buzz. I also do wonder as well, by trying to, you know, and finding ways to generate interest all over the, you know, throughout the calendar year, does a little bit of fatigue set in?
Finally hitting it? Maybe.
Yeah. Do people say, okay, I actually just need a little bit of a break from football? That's the thing. You want to generate interest as much as possible, and it's amazing how the NFL has turned the scouting combine into an event and the start of the league year free agency into a big event. But I wonder if there need to be a few more just kind of natural pauses in the year to allow everyone to kind of catch their breath, not just the public, but also even people with teams.
Well, I feel like sometimes people want the off season to be as exciting as the football season. It's not going to be. And it's part of it too is because the NFL has made this a year round. It has essentially made it a year round sport. But it's like, really, realistically, it's not a year-round sport. So if it's
not like soccer.
Right. It's not actually a year-round sport.
I mean, soccer's close to year-round, basically.
Right. Yeah. So it's not going to be, I don't know, like, people want these, like, big blockbuster off-seasons, but I'm like, I'd rather see the blockbuster during the season. You know, it's this too much of, in reality, it's not a year-round thing.
And remember, they re-signed Darian Stewart, Emmanuel Sanders, and Brandon Marshall last year between June and November. Those were big moves, chewed up a decent chunk of the salary cap. So you were making those moves instead of going heavy into free agency in March.
Well, and understand, I'm not even, for me, it's even nationally. I'm not too terribly upset with what Denver's done because I think the signings have been prudent. Yeah, I wish you would have gotten Calais Campbell. And it would have been nice if we would have a more solid, you know, picture of what the left tackle situation is going to be. But there, as they've said, whether people like to hear it or not, there is time to kind of resolve that. I feel like even from a national perspective, it's not just us because it just felt like everybody was waiting for the Tony Romo shoe to drop, and it hasn't. And so nobody's really had, I guess, what they wanted as the storyline of the day or the drama they wanted to talk to or the mini camp to go check into. Because nobody really, there wasn't a massive face of the NFL switching teams like they had hoped.
Yeah. I mean, go back to 2012 when Peyton Manning went from Indianapolis to Denver. I think that was probably the apex of that. And that's not going to happen very often. I mean, to go back to the first, even go back to the first year of the current free agency system, Reggie White going from Philadelphia to Green Bay. I mean, that was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. Those types of moves aren't going to happen very often because usually an elite player is staying right where he is. I think maybe we're kind of trying to turn some of these second tier stories into elite players' big stories, and maybe it's all being forced a little bit, and there's a little bit of a fatigue from it.
All right, Mason, we talk to you next time. We'll have to go over this preseason schedule. I can't wait. Are you getting any more gut feels on the actual opener? Are we still sticking inside AFC West? Are we still thinking Monday night? What are we thinking? What's it telling you?
My gut feeling is still that it'll be either the second half of the Monday night doubleheader, or I could see opening with one of the NFC East teams on the road.
Monday or Sunday?
I think that would be a Sunday.
A normal 11 o'clock Sunday game.
Yeah, I don't think the Broncos are going to open in the early window on Monday Night Football at what would be 5 p.m. local time while everyone's still stuck on I-25.
All right, thanks everyone for joining us here on this edition of the Horsing Around podcast. We will continue to profile more draft picks as we get closer and closer to the NFL draft, just 2 weeks away now, and it's going to be an exciting time in Bronco land. I hope everybody has a great Easter weekend, and we'll talk to you next week on the Denver Bronco Horsing Around podcast. More to come.